The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Mixed martial arts. How do we like our martial arts? We like them mixed.
The theme song. The voice behind the theme song. We are ready for UFC Vegas 69. We are on the heels of UFC 284, coming off of that event, which has taken up the entire week. It's almost like this card has been almost forgotten about, especially after the main event this past Saturday between Islam Makhachev and Alexander Volkanovski. But tomorrow we turn the page, back in Las Vegas, back at the hallowed Apex, and we got a main event that is very, very interesting, and we're going to talk about that because, I mean, let's be honest, looking at the rest of the card, it's not a lot else to talk about, if we're being honest, but I still think it's going to be a pretty fun watch because some of the matchups are competitively matched. But as far as stakes and name value, it's the main event, one other fight, and that's probably it. But that's all good. We're here for the UFC Vegas 69 preview show. I am Mike Heck. My best friend is here because who else would I do this show with? Mr. Alexander K. Lee. Hello, AK.
Hey, guys. I'm excited to talk about Saturday's card. I'm not even being sarcastic because if I never hear the words robbery or exposed, or God help us, pound for pound, ever again, it will be too soon. People have done everything in their power to ruin what was the best fight of the year so far. I know it's early. One of the best, I think one of the best main events we've ever seen. I thought it was so much fun, so enjoyable, and all the discourse that has come out of it has just been absolutely miserable. So I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to move on to a main event that I think has pretty, well, I don't know. I think the stakes are pretty clear. I have done a poll, of course, for the people. I don't mean to steal your thunder, Mike. I know we're going to get into this very soon, but should the winner of the UFC Vegas 69 main event between Jessica Andrade and Erin Blanchfield become the number one flyweight contender? So far, yes, surging ahead. A very, very big early lead for yes.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be a preview show with you on it if I didn't ask a gymnastics score for this card, AK. It is. We have to keep in mind, though, some positives going for it. Main event, really good, very compelling. We'll talk about it. The legend, Jim Miller, is fighting Alexander Hernandez. There's some, if you're into the up-and-comers and the prospects, we got a bunch of those on there. Some stories for some of these prospects that are very interesting. We have a 4 p.m. prelim, 7 p.m. main card, and a nice tight 11 fights, AK. Nice 11 fights. So factor all of that into your score. Where are we at?
8. I'm going with 8. I don't want to oversell this card, even as, you know, we're going to break it down. We're going to focus on a lot of the positives of this event, but it is essentially a one fight card. That one fight is, I think, super compelling, somehow more compelling than the, you know, what was already a solid main event. It was supposed to be Talos Santos versus Aaron Blanchfield. Talos Santos, with some visa issues, was unable to make it to Vegas for this fight. And again, I probably would have had the rating the same either way, even though I am more interested in this fight than I am in Talos Santos, Aaron Blanchfield. I think the 8 ratings was gonna be there no matter what. Again, it's not a pay-per-view. I usually say pay-per-views start off with like a degree of difficulty of 9, and generally it had to be a pretty deplorable pay-per-view to fall lower than that. Fight nights, I'll say almost same thing. The floor, even though these days the floor should probably be lower, the floor is generally an 8. Again, I think we'll have some highlights on this one. You mentioned 11 fights. That's nice, because also some of these fights could be a drag. That's just what happens when, you know, you have all these cards. And especially with one that's so close to 2 pay-per-views coming up in March, those pay-per-views are looking great. So the fight nights around it are very likely going to suffer. That's kind of just the way it is. And this is one of the cards that's taking a hit. So I'm going to be generous here and say an 8. Again, this doesn't mean I think the card is like an eight out of 10 in terms of quality. It means that if everything goes right, we get like 5 or 6, 7 great finishes. The main event delivers either with, you know, a super exciting highlight or a great back and forth battle. If Jim Miller and Alexander Hernandez delivers, if all this stuff happens, then like it's going for an 8 out of 8. Like the best that this card can be in my mind is an 8. And that's not terrible. That's not a terrible way to spend a Saturday evening. But I do think the deck is somewhat stacked against this card, delivering even up to that relatively low expectation.
Yeah, I do think all in all, this will end up, I mean, there's going to be a couple of snoozers in here. I think most people could look at the fight card and kind of pick those out. But I think all in all, as a watching and viewing experience, I don't think this is going to be a tough watch. Like, I think it's going to be, there's going to be finishes. I think the main event is really fascinating. There's other fights on here that I am intrigued about. But this is just name value and pay on paper and just the appeal to people like outside of the hardcore fandom. There's just not a ton of it. And sometimes that's okay, because UFC 284 didn't have a lot of that either. And that event was pretty incredible and it seemed to fly by. And yeah, the storylines are what they are, but there were some really good ones as well. So let's talk about this main event. You mentioned it, because I was going to ask you about this. You're more excited for this fight, Jessica Andrade versus Aaron Blanchfield, than you were for the Talos Santos versus Aaron Blanchfield fight. Why, AK? Why is that?
Just because Jessica Andrade is involved. You throw Jessica Andrade as a replacement for any fighter, that fight becomes more exciting. I don't care who it is. If she replaced Valentina Shevchenko against Alexa Grasso, I'd say that's a more exciting fight. Jessica Andrade is awesome. She just bounces between two-weight divisions, smashes people, submits them, ruins other contenders' plans, just does not care about the UFC's plans. She says, listen, if you're going to sign me up to go up in there against someone, I'm not a stepping stone. I'm not a name for someone else to make their name off of. You sign me, I'm going to do some damage and hurt somebody. Lauren Murphy found this out the hard way. And then all the credit in the world to Lauren Murphy. She is certainly not someone who's like, oh, I'm getting matched up with Jessica Andrade and I'm going to beat her and get a title shot. She definitely knew like there's a very good chance that Jessica Andrade is going to pummel me. And I'm going to lose all this momentum I had. She put it on the line. Sure enough, that's what we got. Very one-sided decision win for Jessica Andrade. And now this is a very on the completely other side of things. We go from, again, a great, super tough, gritty veteran in Lauren Murphy to Aaron Blanchfield, who we've learned a lot about, you know, since she joined the UFC. Even before the UFC, we had the chance to see her compete, you know, in combat jiu-jitsu and Invicta. So we know more about her than the average, you know, 23-year-old strawweight prospect. We know more about her than we normally would, someone with that description. But we still don't know a lot. This is, what, her 11th pro fight? And against a really, really big step up in competition. I thought Molly McCann was a good step up in competition last time. Ran through her. Just destroyed that test. Talos Santos was an even more significant jump up. And now Jessica Andrade is a level up above her. So I'm compelled from the Jessica Andrade side again. Does she just add Aaron Blanchfield to her highlight reel? And I'm compelled from the Aaron Blanchfield side. if she gets a win over Jessica Andrade, decision, submission, anything, split, I don't care, controversial. If she's able to take Jessica Andrade to the limit and squeak out a win, I'll be absolutely amazed. And I will be the first one saying, you know what, just throw her in there with the Valentina Grasso winner, and I totally approve.
Yeah, I feel if Erin Blanchfield wins this fight in any way, she gets the title shot. Like, she's next in line. I mean, if Alexa Grasso beats Valentina Shevchenko, they'll probably run that one back. But if Shevchenko wins, and I think most expect her to, if Blanchfield wins this fight, I mean, there's no other fight. It's give her the title shot. She's 23. Even if she loses, it's not like she can't get back and get another one, because I think she can find her way back, because mostly because Valentina is just not going to fight forever. But I mean, to go from Molly McCann to Tyler Santos to Jessica Andrade in a matter of 3 months is insane, AK. And so I feel for sure that if Erin Blanchfield wins, she's getting a title shot. Jessica Andrade is a little bit different, because it's not like she's calling for Valentina. She's calling for Zhang Weili. If she wins, she wants the 115-pound title fight. Because she hasn't really stuck to an actual weight class, I don't know if I'm as convinced that she'll get a title fight with a win over Erin Blanchfield. Erin Blanchfield, I feel she will get a title fight. Are you on the same wavelength as me, or are you kind of with the pollsters who are saying that no matter who wins, the next fight will be for a UFC title?
Yeah, right now the poll at a solid, we got already 100 votes in, 82% yes, just says the winner. Now, Mike, this could mean that people are anticipating one name or the other. So I should have made it more clear which fighter deserves. But again, I think for me, the whole debate is if either woman needs to do that much more. So that's why I kind of left it a little more vague. But so yeah, this could be a vote. This could be 81%, like mostly thinking Blanchfield. It could be 81%, mostly thinking Andrade. It's not clear based on the results, but I do think Blanchfield's a little bit closer. I don't know if I'm quite with you on that. Like, she's guaranteed. Like I said, I'm for it. I think she's done enough. Manon Fiorot has looked really good. I don't know if she made the strongest case. And kind of like the Baneel Dariush thing, I think she has maybe been a little too modest in her interview. She hasn't made that call that, like, yes, I am the one to beat Valentina. Put me in there with her now. I feel like Erin would do that. I'm not sure if that's the case, but I feel like if she's, again, let's say had a more dominant win, not a split decision, but like finished Jessica Andrade, I'm almost sure Blanchfield would say, I'm ready for that title shot. Give it to me. And if I'm wrong, you know, listen, we'll review this over the weekend and we'll roast me on a heck of a morning next week. I feel like she would. So she is closer in that regard. She also, of course, has not fought for the flyweight title before. Jessica Andrade has. I don't know how interested they are if Valentina retains against Grasso, against booking Andrade against her again. I would love to see it. I don't know if it would go differently, but I think very often rematches at this level, championship rematches, people would go, you can go throughout history and see the majority don't play out the same way as the fight before. There are exceptions. People throw them up in the comments. I know they're going to tell me like two fight series where the champion just destroyed the challenger. That's fine. But for the most part, they do play out differently. And I think Jessica Andrade is a better fighter than she was when she first fought Valentina. I think Valentina's a better fighter too. So again, it could be the same winner, but could play out differently. And that's a fun thing to watch. So I don't think Andrade is as far away as some people might think. I don't think Erin is as close as some people might think. But I do agree Erin Blanchfield is closer. But there is a case. I don't know if Fiorot can somehow slide in there still. And if Tyler Santos, depending when she gets back, she might be able to get a fight. But I would hope that one of these two women moves at least, if not a guaranteed title shot, with a win on Saturday, moves to the front of the line.
Yeah, Fiorot could just fight Santos. Winner is next in line, and we could just go from there. The betting lines have been interesting, because when this fight was announced, the betting lines opened as Jessica Andrade, a -125 favorite. Less than 2 hours later, we're at -190 for Jessica Andrade, and it's been kind of floating between like 150, 175, 180. And then the last couple days, we are creeping back up. And as of right now, according to DraftKings, Jessica Andrade still the favorite, -130, and the comeback on Erin Blanchfield is +110. I typically don't play the ponies, AK, but is this betting line kind of where you expected it to be? Did you think Andrade would be a little bit of a bigger favorite? What do you think?
I would have thought that Andrade would be a bigger favorite, but again, this just tells us where the money's coming in, that people are liking the underdog aspect of Erin Blanchfield. she's just so intriguing. And again, we have yet to see her lose in the UFC. That Mystique, the undefeated, she still has it. People could even look at the Tracy Cortez fight, that's her one loss with decision, and say, well, she didn't really lose that one. So she you could argue she's not just undefeated in the UFC, but essentially has not lost in her pro career. At the very least, again, that one loss, pretty highly contentious, not something that really exposed her. So it's a very, that one is a very weak in her loss column. That it's 10-1. The 10 wins are a lot more illustrative of her skills than that one loss so far. So there has that Mystique. She also has an A+ skill. I talk about this, and I think Jed and I talk about this a lot. We talk about fighters having one elite A+ skill, and we also talk about athleticism a lot. Erin Blanchfield, a great athlete. So that's in, I don't know if that's, but so is Jessica Andrade. That's pretty close, but it's certainly a notch for Erin Blanchfield. She's of this newer generation of fighters that it's not just skilled. She's got that raw talent too. And her A+ skill, grappling. I mean, we know how far that can take you in MMA. And she's so aggressive. She is not I'm going to take you down and hold you down. Man, she is aggressive going for a finish. And that's something like one of those things we just say, you can't really teach how aggressive she'll be against someone like Jessica Andrade, who again, this is a 5-round fight. She may want to consider conserving her energy. And if she's able to take her down, hold her down for a bit, we might see more of that. So how aggressive she'll be in this one is another question. But I can see why Blanchfield would be such a live underdog, because we just haven't really seen her tested that badly, on the ground at least, in the UFC. And if she can get it there, there's a very good chance that skill that carries her to a win over a former strawweight champion. Even if we're talking about all-around skill set, Jessica Andrade probably has the advantage. Finishing power, Jessica Andrade has the advantage. That grappling, that A+ elite grappling, can neutralize so many of those things. So, I, like I said, you're not a better. I'm not a better, but I can understand why there's some faith for Blanchfield here.
What's the biggest question you have about this fight? Because, I mean, there's a few. I think a lot of people have gone back and watched the JJ Aldrich fight and feel like, you know, Blanchfield won that fight. She got a finish, but that fight did not start well for her. And a lot of the punishment she took in that first round, a lot of the big shots she took were going for takedowns and leaving herself open for big shots. And JJ Aldrich looked really good in that first round. She landed some good shots. And if Jessica Andrade is able to get those openings, this could be a very short night. However, you would have to think that after reviewing tape following the Aldrich fight, that was like priority one in terms of getting better and trying to fix that. And we saw it in the Molly McCann fight a little bit more. She just ran through everything, took her down and beat the hell out of her until she got the finish. So there's that. And then there's Andrade. She's coming off of a dominant win, but a win where she worked really hard. She hit Lauren Murphy like 500 times in that fight. She broke all sorts of records. That fight was not that long ago. So there are some interesting questions for this fight. What's your biggest one? Does it have to do with the 5 rounds? Is it one fighter or the other? Where are you at with as far as the biggest question, the biggest thing that you're looking to see as soon as this fight starts?
I'll be honest, I think, and maybe this is just because we're coming off of the Alexander Volkanovski fight, I think size is going to matter here. It's not something really talked about because we do view Jessica Andrade as one of the stronger women on the UFC roster, regardless of whether she's competing at 115 or 125. But there is a difference. I do think Blanchfield is going to have a noticeable height advantage. And like I said, Erin Blanchfield is not, you know, doesn't have these you know, big stacked up muscles, she's really, really, really strong. I think anyone who's seen her fight, I'm not like, this isn't news to anyone who's actually seen her fight. She has amazing technique in grappling, but again, being a really good athlete, being young, not even in her physical prime yet, is a huge advantage for her. She's really, really strong. And that is going to make a difference when it comes to grappling with Jessica Andrade. Again, Jessica Andrade, great offensive grappler, really, really strong, regardless of what division she's fighting in. But there is a size difference. And that's kind of one of the things we're not talking about a lot. Because again, we think Jessica Andrade, the pile driver, we just think of her as power, power, power. But I think she is at a strength disadvantage here, especially when it comes to the grappling. The striking, of course, I don't know how, I'm sure Erin Blanchfield is improving by leaps and bounds every time we see her. But I don't think she's anywhere near where Jessica Andrade is. And I think any prolonged stand-up would be an enormous mistake. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's the direction that it goes in. But yeah, I think people really need to, when they see them step into the cage, sort of the rehydrated weights and everything, they're going to see like, oh, wow, like Erin Blanchfield, she's got some physical advantages here. And that could matter, especially if it goes the distance.
It's an interesting fight. A lot of people talk about just what's going to happen to the grappling exchanges. Jessica Andrade has been very difficult to take down. She has a 73% takedown defense percentage. And we have to put it into effect that at UFC 261, when Jessica Andrade fought Valentina Shevchenko, Valentina Shevchenko took her down 7 times in 7 attempts. So the fact that with those numbers in that one fight, she's still at a 73% clip is just ridiculous. She's very difficult to take down. Can she be taken down? Sure. But she is very difficult to be taken down. So let's go, AK. What's the pick? You heard the odds. Minus 130 for Andrade. Comeback on Erin Blanchfield, plus 110. Are we going with Jessica Andrade to become the winningest women's fighter in UFC history, being in her own spot at the top of that list by herself? Or will Erin Blanchfield get over the hump a lot quicker than people thought she would and perhaps find herself in a title fight next?
People know me, Mike. I'm going with the boring, safe pick here. It's hard for me to pick against Andrade. Weeks notice or not, you know, she strikes me as the kind of fighter that's pretty much always in game shape, is always gearing up to fight someone. This specific opponent, yes, very tricky. Probably the strongest grappler she's faced since, I mean, maybe Valentina. I know Cynthia Calvillo's in there, but honestly, at this point, I would give Erin Blanchfield the edge over her. Amanda Lemos, also a great grappler, and I might give Blanchfield the edge over her as well. So maybe since Valentina, she hasn't faced someone with this level of wrestling and this submission offense. But I do think, as you just mentioned, it's hard to take Jessica Andrade down and keep her down. I mentioned the size thing, and for sure, I think Erin Blanchfield will have some success. Can she control her and keep her down for 5 rounds, or even if she gets a takedown every round, will it be enough to mitigate what damage Jessica Andrade is able to do on the feet? So while I'm leaning towards an Andrade finish, I could also see Andrade winning a decision again, just by doing more damage with the striking, leaving a better and bigger impression on the judges. So I've got Andrade winning pretty firmly in my mind. I am going to go finish again. And this is no, listen, I want to remind people, Erin Blanchfield's 23 years old. She doesn't turn 24 until May. She has a lot of growing to do. She has a lot of great fights ahead of her. She might fight Andrade again somewhere down the road. She might win a couple of other fights this year and end up getting a title fight in 2024. And she might lose that. She has losses ahead of her. You know, she's a phenomenally talented fighter. So a win from her wouldn't surprise me, but if I'm being asked to make a pick, sticking with what I know, what I'm a little more familiar with, Jessica Andrade, the finishing power, the quality of competition she's faced, I think it just gives her a really, really big edge here. So I'm going Andrade by 3rd round TKO. Flurry of strikes.
I've been kind of back and forth on this one because when it was first announced, I was like, oh man, Jessica Andrade is going to win this fight. And then the more I've looked into it and going back and seeing improvements and where these two women have gone, Jessica Andrade getting an early finish in this one would not surprise me. It would not surprise me. Erin Blanchfield needs to get in a groove to really get going. And we saw it in the JJ Aldridge fight. Didn't really see it as much in the Molly McCann fight. I just think that was such a favorable matchup for her in a lot of ways. But we thought Molly was just kind of riding the hot hand and maybe she could pull something out and make this more competitive. But Erin Blanchfield proved the betting odds to be pretty damn accurate, if not too low. And she looked incredible. So I'm going Erin Blanchfield. She's going to pay for it. She is going to pay the piper to get this win. She's going to have to weather a storm and she's going to have to go through the fire to do it. But I think if she has some momentum coming out of that second round, heading into 3, 4, and 5, I think she can win this fight. The fact that it's 5 rounds, and I know Erin hasn't had an entire fight camp to get ready for 5 rounds because it got shifted on her when they moved the Sandhagen Vera fight to the San Antonio card. She's been getting ready for a fight. And Jessica Andrade was. She fought Lauren Murphy. Probably take a little bit of time off to get back into it. I do feel like the longer this fight goes, the more it does favor Erin Blanchfield, but she's just got to weather that storm. And I'm curious to see what her durability is going to be like. I'm curious to see how she's going to react to getting hit by someone like Jessica Andrade. And there is a real world where Andrade could catch her with a body shot, something nasty, and hurt her and get her out of there quick. But I think time is on Blanchfield's side here. If she can extend this fight, she could weather that storm, get a little momentum, tail end of the second round, going into the third, I think she can cruise and win round three and then just kind of take it from there. I think Andrade will start to wear down a little bit. Blanchfield will start to get better. And I think she wins will end up being a pretty competitive decision, 48-47. I am not confident about this pick at all, but I keep going back and forth. This is where I'm at right now. And I think if Blanchfield can just weather that early 7 or 8 minutes, I think she'll win this fight. I think she will eventually get some takedowns. And once she gets one and gets a second one, I think she's going to be able to continue getting them. And I think she just rides it out and picks up a decision. But such an interesting fight, AK. Like, this is just a really interesting matchup. So great main event. Great main event. Erin Blanchfield could just shake this whole damn division up if she is able to go in and win this fight tomorrow.
Shake up the division. Shake up our... I can't believe I was just tilted.
Oh, here it comes.
Our pound for pound rankings. I don't think she's received. Oh, gosh. I'm talking about the men's pound for pound rankings. I'd love to talk about some more about the women's pound for pound rankings. Especially, yes, if I'm trying to see, I don't think Blanchfield. Okay, she has one vote. She has received. She's on one ballot. She's on one ballot of our 8-person rankings team. So that means she's probably hovering somewhere in, I don't know what the place of the vote was, but probably somewhere in like the 25 to 30 range. We have Jessica Andrade at number 5, pound for pound. Some would argue that she could be higher given that she does compete actively in 2 weight classes. So if Erin Blanchfield were to beat her, I mean, I don't think Erin Blanchfield takes the number 5 spot. It probably bumps. Boy, that would really screw things up. You know, I now regret bringing this up.
She'd be in my top 10. She'd be in my top 10.
I'll tell people now. So here's why. The whole strawweight sort of situation is what has made the outside of the top 4, our pound for pound rankings, a mess, because we have number 5, Jessica Andrade, number 6, Carla Esparza, number 6, Rose Namajunas, number 8, Juliana Pena. So there's kind of like some MMA math going on there. So if Blanchfield, like if you were to automatically put her above Andrade, which you don't necessarily have to do, because Andrade competes in 2 weight classes, you know. So I mean, a win doesn't necessarily give her Andrade a spot, and this depends how people do their theoretical nonsense pound for pound rankings. And I say nonsense, including ours. So if you put her above Andrade, you'd also be putting her above Carla Esparza, Rose Namajunas, Juliana Pena. Feels like a huge jump. Feels like too much, but. Again, this is all under the assumption that she beats Jessica Andrade, which I will be shocked if that happens in the first place. And I'll worry about all that other stuff after.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Rest of the main car, we have Zach Pauga moving down to 205, Jordan Wright moving up to 205.
Yes.
That is the penultimate fight, right, AK?
Yes. This is, I specifically in a post today had to mention this fight, and I called it the penultimate bout. And listen, it doesn't roll off the tongue, it doesn't jump off the page, but I need to get this going and to remove the automatic co-main event tag from every fight night, you know, card they try. Listen, this isn't just a UFC thing. Bellator as well. Bellator has had some second to last fights that I'm like, this is not a co-main event. Let's be honest. They have a card coming up that has a main event that isn't actually a main event. Okay. I'm not going to name names. I'm just saying, people, check your Bellator calendar. There's probably a card coming up that you didn't even know was happening. That's headlined, I guess you can't take that away, by somewhat anonymous heavyweights. Let's put it that way. So Jordan Wright, Zach Pauga. Listen, this is the spot they ended up in. I don't know. We're going to talk more about the card. I'm really not entirely sure how they decided who to put where. You know, we've got Jim Miller and Alexander Hernandez, but that makes sense as a main card opener, so I'm kind of okay with that. You have some fighters with numbers next to their names in the prelims. I'm not sure why you would, you know, maybe not give one of them the co-main event slot, other than the fact that those matchups aren't, like, on paper might not be super entertaining. So yeah, this is what they're going with. We hope the second last fight has a finish. And given the names involved, highly likely. Again, if I gambled, I would absolutely take the under as far as is the fight going to go to decision? Possible. I don't know what the odds are. I'll check real quick, but it has to be like
under. Under 1.5 is -200. Under 2.5 is -455. So.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right. Yeah, and listen, Jed and I, again, we always talk about, you need fighters on rosters who lose in entertaining ways. And Jordan Wright has been that guy, okay? And it is not an insult to Jordan Wright. Someone has to go in there and be the B-side in these fights and often, unfortunately, get rolled over in a super entertaining way. And Jordan Wright does that better than a lot of people on the roster. So win or lose, I hope they keep Jordan Wright around, because I think he's got a good personality. I think he goes in there to, again, KO or get KO'd, sub or get subbed. That's exactly what's going to happen with Zach Pauga. Zach Pauga, I actually thought he was going to win his season of The Ultimate Fighter. He got out-athleticismed and outpowered by Mo Usman, who just caught him with a beauty of a shot, put Zach Pauga's lights out. But skill-wise, I do think he was the best heavyweight on that season. And I think light heavyweight's going to look good on him. And he's got some legitimate knockout power. Great, great hands, good knockout power. I think he's going to put Jordan Wright down. So there you go. If the UFC's hoping for a finish before the way more high-stakes main event, then you know, they could have done worse than booking these two in that slot.
We got a battle of multi-time contender series winners, Josh Parisian and Jamal Pogues. Another multi-time contender series vet, William Knight, on this main card against Martin Pracnio. William Knight looks just ridiculous right now. He just doesn't even look like a human being.
Josh Parisian. Oh, let's talk about William Knight first. Yeah, I saw him facing off with Martin Pracnio, and Martin Pracnio is not like in bad shape. He's a healthy, athletic man. But my goodness, William Knight looked friggin' yoked at the official weigh-ins. It was crazy. I mean, he always does. William Knight, if you're out there, I'm sorry. We keep talking about your physique. You're not just a mound of muscles. You're a human being. You're a UFC fighter. But listen, you're also in absolutely superb shape, and we can't help but talk about it. And listen, if we want to ask why this fight's on the main card, I'm just saying, if your average person is browsing the ESPN Plus and wants to see what this UFC thing is all about, and they see William Knight on the screen, they're probably going to stay tuned in. They're probably going to say, I got to see what this guy's about, because this dude looks awesome.
What do you want to say about Josh Parisian? I'm curious.
Josh Parisian, you mentioned he's a two. He's not just a two. He has to be the only, Mike, I has to be the only two-time Contender Series winner and Ultimate Fighter contestant. Because we all remember after the, it was in the most like tragic set of circumstances. I think it was after he won the first fight that they're like, okay, we're not giving UFC contract, but we're giving you a spot on the next season of the Ultimate Fighter. And I was like, what in the hell kind of prize is that? And then he didn't even get signed off the show. It wasn't even like, you know, because sometimes even if you don't win the show, you still get signed. He still had to go back to the regionals after that. And then, as you mentioned, go back into Contender Series again. I don't know. What a bizarre. Him and Josh Uroser have like, they could write a novel probably on their journeys to the UFC because they both just took this incredibly long route to their, you know, to finally getting a long-term stay in the UFC. It's tough out there for some people, man. Josh Parisian, God bless him for sticking with it, because after that Ultimate Fighter thing, I would have just been like, I don't even care about the UFC anymore. Like, I don't know why they made me jump through these hoops, but hey, he's on the roster now, no complaints, and he's on the main card.
He had 7 fights before getting into the UFC after the Ultimate Fighter, including the Contender Series win. He is coming off of a bonus winning performance in June of 2022 against Alan Badeau. Got a second round ground and pound finish, got himself 50 G's. So we'll see if he can continue that momentum against Jamal Pogues and see how Jamal does in his octagon debut. And then the other fight on the main card is probably the one that sticks out more than any other outside of the main event. Jim Miller, the man with the most wins in UFC history, looking to extend that record, taking on Alexander Hernandez, who steps in on pretty short notice to replace Mowgli Benitez. Hernandez dropped to 145. Go to MMA Fighting's YouTube channel. He had some issues with that weight cut and some side effects, so to speak. And he's back up to 155, looking a little more healthy, getting a big opportunity against Jim Miller. I talked about this on Heck of a Morning earlier. There are interesting UFC careers. If there's like a top 10 list of just guys in the last 5, 6, 7 years who have come into the UFC, Hernandez is one of the more interesting cases of just really weird careers. Coming in against Benny Dariush, short notice, finishes him in 42 seconds, beats a ranked guy in a second fight, another ranked guy, and then gets over big during the press conference before fighting Donald Cerrone, said a lot of stuff, and then got finished by Cerrone, and it just doesn't feel like he's gotten past that moment, because he's had wins, obviously, but the Trinaldo one was kind of a weird one. And then the other ones, Chris Gritzmacher, and then Mike Breeden, and then the rest has just been weird, where he has really good starts and then ends up getting finished in the second round. So just a strange career for a guy who never really got the chance to develop in the UFC. He got thrown right into the fire. And then there's Jim freaking Miller, who just ages like a fine wine, AK. This fight's really interesting. Alexander Hernandez is a huge favorite in this fight, AK. Minus 250.
Huge favorite.
The comeback of Jim Miller is plus 185, AK.
I don't bet on MMA, but were I to do so, I might splash a little money on Jim Miller. That is highly disrespectful. But it kind of like encapsulates everything you said about, everything you just said about Alexander Hernandez. That was a great rundown, Mike. There is something about him winning that Dariush fight. And if you will remember, there was a little bit of controversy. Some people thought there might have been a bit of a fake glove tap. And then, you know, he rushes Benil and knocks him out in just over 40 seconds. But ever since he has that win on his resume, I mean, that, like you said, kind of immediately elevated him to the next tier, like past prospect. Now it's like, oh, this guy's like could be a legit contender. It beats OAM. And then, yes, the Donald Cerrone fight didn't go his way. And it's been rocky since. But there's still this confidence in him. Maybe it's the look. You know, you look at this guy, good looking kid, great shape. Great highlight reel. You know, if you just look at the highlight reel, he's got some really impressive knockouts on there, right? So he's a very easy sell. You look at the age. What's Hernandez? He's 30, just recently turned 30. And Jim Miller is 39 years old. So combat sports, I mean, listen, I harp on it all the time. I'm usually leaning towards the younger man. But Jim Miller is like an exception, like because he's been beating younger guys. He's been beating more athletic guys than him. He's been beating more explosive athletes than him, you know what I mean? So if this was like his kryptonite, it would have happened a long time ago. And it's not like Jim Miller's on like a 10 fight win streak or something. He does lose fights, but he usually is able to make up. He's so skilled. He's usually able to make up that gap in whatever physical advantage his opponent may have. So that line does surprise me. I actually did not. I had not looked at it. Hernandez being an over 2-1 favorite is just a real disrespectful. And I don't know if people are thinking he's going to win first round KO. Casey always likes to look at the Typology fight predictions. And of course, the educated fans of Typology have it inverted. They have 65% are picking Miller to win, 59% picking by submission. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's one of those fights where I think people are looking at it like if Hernandez doesn't get him out of there in the first, it could be a rough night for him. Because that's just been kind of the story of his run post Cerrone loss. First round finish or bust, really, outside of the Trinaldo fight, which a lot of people didn't even think he won. So yeah, it's we'll see if he can do it here. I mean, this would be a great momentum swing for this young man. He's only 30. So if he could beat Jim Miller and add that to his resume, like, that's huge for him. I know a lot of people don't like Hernandez because of the Cerrone stuff, that press conference before that fight, but interesting young man. Let's see if he can get back, and Jim Miller's just killing it, man. We'll see if he can get it done. Do you have a low-key banger, AK? Do you have something?
I'm intrigued, but I'm just going to go with two guys. We talked about a little of this before we went cameras on, before we started the show. People might, looking at the preliminary list and seeing, hey, there's OSP and Philip Lins. Like, I know those guys. OSP has been in, you know, was a contender in the light heavyweight division and has hung around the top 25. I'm trying to think how many light heavyweights there are. Probably not that many. Hung around the top 20 of the light heavyweight division for a long time, for a long, long time. He's been with the UFC since, I have to look at this, it feels like a decade. I don't want to say a decade, but no, I'm right. April 2013, his first UFC fight. So we're coming on the 10 magical years of OSP, a decade of dominance. And Philippe Lins, some people might remember from the PFL, once won a $1 million and a PFL tournament crown. So there's some sizzle there. And I'm not saying like, oh, that should be on any main card. But again, when you look at some of the names we had up there, Josh Parisi and Jamal Pogues, William Knight, Marcin Prakniaw, Jordan Wright, Zach Poga, you do kind of wonder, could they not have found a space for OSP and Philippe Lins? A couple of reasons, like just to go devil's advocate against myself. Again, on paper, could be an ugly fight, but OSP, he gets a lot of finishes. He's like one of light heavyweight division's leaders in career finishes, so that's great. The other issue is that this fight fell through twice before already, so maybe they thought it had the bad juju, and they're like, we're just going to have to reshuffle the main card if we put it on there anyway. Let's tuck it away in the prelims. If it gets postponed again, no one will even know. So fingers crossed, we aren't at fight night yet. The two gentlemen are not in the cage, but it looks like it's actually going to happen, and I kind of wish they'd been given one of those spots. I maybe would have bumped Parisian and Pogues down to the prelims and had just light heavyweight fiesta on the ESPN Plus main card.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some like fun names on this one. Like Clayton Carpenter is really fun. AJ Fletcher is fun. He's looking for his first UFC win, fighting Demba Garimbo, who that dude just getting in a cage and fighting like is probably the 1,000th hardest thing he's ever had to do in his life. This guy has just been through it all. If you ever watched the movie Blood Diamond, that's essentially what his childhood was like. I spoke to him, I think it was October 2021, and basically had to escape from where he was living. That was like the way he made money. He became a freaking diamond smuggler when he was 16 years old and basically had to try to escape Zimbabwe, got caught at the border, and was like attacked by dogs, and he's got like scars all over him. You'll see him when he fights, just basically from that job he was doing and then trying to escape. And eventually he did. They caught him, illegally brought him back, and then he escaped again and, you know, had to overcome some hardships, found MMA, and now he's in the UFC. So really interesting story. And finally he gets his UFC shot. So very, very interesting. Khusein Ashgabov, I mean, dude's 23-0 fighting Jamal Emmers. If you're a fan of grappling and wrestling, I think that's going to be a fun one. And
what's Emmers? What are the odds there? What are the odds in that fight, Ashgabov and Emmers?
I bet it's pretty close.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Minus 155. Yeah. Minus 155. Wow. Emmers plus 135. BTL alumnist Evan Elder is back fighting against Nazim Sadikov, who's really, really good.
Back in his proper weight class, right? He had to fight at welterweight the first time, right?
Yeah, he took the fight on super short notice. So
yeah. Okay. So that's good. It's almost like a second chance to make a first impression, I think.
Yes. So yeah, there we go.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, let's go to the peeps. Let's see what the peeps have to say. We'll take a few questions from the peeps. There he is.
Hello.
E. Casey Lydon. How are you doing, buddy?
Wonderful, wonderful. By the way, in those pound for pound rankings, I am the person that has Blanchfield in my top 20.
And how high?
I have her at 19. And okay. I also have Jessica Andrade, the highest ranked pound for pound in our entire staff. I have her at number two.
What, number two? Mm-hmm. Number two.
So this main event for me, in terms of pound for pound rankings and just the flyweight division in general, freaking rules. Love it. Love it, man. All right. Do. A little positivity here.
And Duval. Duval. I'm so pumped for this main event. That's what's
up. Yes. I think we should all be pumped for this main event. Yeah.
Yes. Pumped for the main event. where are we? You kind of answered this, but
Erin hasn't been finishing her career. Would Jessica be the first, or does this go to the card? So AK, you're saying she will be finished third round.
I think Jessica Andrade will be the first. Yeah.
And I will go that.
She can't finish Lauren Murphy, but she can finish Erin Blanchfield. Do you think? Is that what you think? Like,
I mean, Lauren Murphy's been hit a million times, so I mean, she's used to it. Erin hasn't really been cracked. So, her getting hit by Jessica Andrade is, would be a first person.
Yeah.
But to me, and I could be wrong about this, but to me, if there is going to be a finish in this fight, it's going to come from Jessica Andrade. That's what I think.
Jessica Andrade will change your life. I'm looking here. Cynthia Calvillo had never been finished before running to Jessica Andrade. Amanda Lemos had never been submitted before running into Jessica Andrade. I'm just trying to see who was the first, like how many people she was the first to finish. But anyway, listen, those are two really good recent examples. Carolina had never been knocked out, and then she ran to Jessica Andrade and got one shot smoked. So a lot of good quality fighters come into their fights with Jessica Andrade having never been either knocked out or submitted, and she just has another level of finishing power. And has been a lot of fighters first. So would not surprise me at all if on Saturday that's the case again.
Ooh. All right. We did a low key.
Is Jordan Wright the new Sam Alvey?
No, his fights are exciting. Yeah. No, this is I like this is from Me Housebot. I like where your head's at. Yes, I get, as someone who could keep losing fights and keep getting chances. Yes, I get where your head is at. But with respect to Sam Alvey, his fights were occasionally a bit of a grind. He didn't always lose in the most entertaining way. There's a few in there. The Julian Marquez one was awesome. There's a few in there, but some of his fights were just. It's why I think one reason why people were so shocked that he was able to hang on for so long was that he wasn't even losing, like getting smashed every time. Some of those fights were just completely forgettable, and he was still hanging on. Jordan Wright is like, again, he's going in there and he's just getting got real bad. If they did a reverse highlight reel, he'd have one of the best ones out there in the UFC right now. And it sounds so insulting to Jordan Wright. But again, there is an art to going in there and being aggressive and going for the kill and getting taken out. And again, you need fighters like that. That's what I believe.
Yeah. He just gets or get got.
Yeah. That's Jordan Wright, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Take out Zach Pog. You know what? You add to your actual highlight reel on Saturday. You take out Zach Pog because I'm happy to be proven wrong.
I think it's a bit unfair for Jordan Wright that the fact that they put him in the the co-main event. I mean, it's fine that he got another fight, but being a co-main event is kind of asking a lot from what we traditionally expect. But that's all.
I think he's probably more, and this is not exactly the same, but I think he's probably more, he's like more Jeremy Stevens than Sam Alvey, if that makes sense. Because Stevens, in a lot of respects, is a get or get got guy too. So
yeah. I'm into that.
It's just, except with Jeremy Stevens, he's all mean faced, and Jordan Wright's just big smiles.
Yeah, very, very happy.
Yeah,
I'm surprised Jordan Wright's is such a big underdog in this fight. I thought this one would be aligned a little bit closer, despite the 3-fight losing streak. But I just considering what Jordan brings to the table, and that fight's just going to be madness. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a plus 225 dog in this fight.
I'm picking Jordan Wright.
Oh, man.
All right. What's at stake for Andrade?
I think she's go ahead, I guess. Go ahead, Mike.
I'd be happy to see her get a title shot in either division. I know it'll look weird if she wins and then gets a 115-pound title shot, but Rose Namajunas is nowhere to be seen. The title shot is her, as far as we know, is hers for the taking. There's that history with Zhang. She's beaten her twice. We're pretty sure if Rose comes out and or even not even publicly goes to the UFC and says, I'm ready to fight. I have the formula to beat Zhang. I've done it twice. Let me go in there and get another shot at her. I'm pretty sure they would. So the fact that has not, I haven't heard any rumblings, and that has not been made yet, is surprising to me, and that does leave the door open. And again, I feel like you have to reward Jessica Andrade. I don't know how many times Jessica Andrade has fought since Rose Namajunas last fought. I don't see how anyone could complain if the work that she's done in two divisions over the past whatever year or so should earn her a title shot in especially at strawweight. Well, again, with the presumptive number one contender nowhere to be seen. So I don't normally like fighters getting title fights, you know, fighting in a different weight class, but she's done enough work in both. Jessica Andrade deserves it. So she could be next for Zhang. She's going to be, if she wins, she'll be fighting for one of the titles next, I have to imagine.
It's close. But to me, I think she fights Rose next, no matter what. I think that's the fight that makes the most sense. It could be a 115, it could be a 125, doesn't matter. If Rose wants to actually go up to 125 and test it out, she could fight Jessica Andrade, who has fought at 125 many times at this point. So do that. Big, huge fight for both women. Winner gets a title shot. There you go.
Man, for as awesome as the women's 115 division is, there isn't really a number one contender right now, really, is there? It's kind of weird.
Lemos, like, maybe. Lemos is probably like the front runner, and then Andrade is kind of there, but she fights at 125 most of the time. So,
I'm going to go to this question by Mr. Boza, actually.
Jessica doesn't want to stay at flyweight. She thinks if she beats Aaron, she would get Weili next. Should Jessica just pick a division and stay there? I don't look at this like the same as, I don't know. I think she's fine doing both. Keeps her busy, keeps her active. She just wants to get in there and scrap. And like we just said, Zhang doesn't really hit. You'd think Amanda Lemos is the top gal right now, but you would think from a fan's perspective that Weili Andrade 2 would be a bigger fight, because that first one just never really got going. Zhang just blitzed her and beat the hell out of her and finished her fast. And it was at a weird time. It was all different things heading into it. So I don't think she has to. What do you think, AK? Like, I don't think she has to. I think she's fine. Like, yeah,
not at all.
Her flyweight wins have strawweight merit to them, which is kind of weird to say.
And again, she's been competing in both. She took out Amanda Lemos in 3 minutes. It was a submission no one had ever seen before. That's the last time we saw her fight at 115. Like, it's very fresh in our minds how good Jessica Andrade is at 115. So it doesn't matter that this is now back-to-back flyweight fights. We know that she is one of the top five strawweights, and on any given day could probably beat Rose Namajunas, could probably beat Carla Esparza. I mean, she would be heavily favored against Carla Esparza. If that matchup were made, she'd be at least a minus 200 favorite. So it's, we can talk about like real resumes all you want, but because she's been around for so long, because she has a highlight reel, because she's just knocked off names in two divisions, the public will readily accept Jessica Andrade fighting for a title especially if she gets past Erin Blanchfield in impressive fashion again. And it doesn't matter whether it's a 125, doesn't matter whether it's 115. She's the one that's staying active. She's the one that's racking up names. At some point, you have to reward her. So, completely, she does not need to pick a division. It really doesn't matter for her.
I talked to Jessica Andrade during International Fight Week, and I think she was scheduled to maybe fight Manon Fiorot when, like, it was maybe Chookagian. And I think she got injured, like, maybe a week before that. And, I mean, even during that interview, she said, I'm going back to 115. Like, when I come back, 115, all my fights are going to be a 115. And her next two fights are 125. So it's hard to keep her down. She just wants to fight. And if that phone rings, she's going to say yes. She doesn't say no to anything. So I don't think... If there's one fighter who could bounce around and it doesn't really affect things too much, it's her. Like, it's not like Lorenz Larkin. Like, Lorenz could be ranked in one of these divisions in our rankings, but he'll fight twice at 185, then he'll fight twice at 170, and he'll go back to 85, then he'll miss weight, then he'll go back to 170. So it's like, it's a different story between him and her, if that makes sense.
Do you like the UFC, how they do this with Andrade? I mean, is this... Overall, does it create more confusion, or is this she's just an exception?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think it creates a lot of confusion. Like, that's just who she is now. Phone rings, 115 or 125, no, she's in.
But a lot of fighters say that. But the UFC lets her do this, though. That's the kind of the difference. I mean, like, Aldo always wanted to go for two belts, but the UFC just wouldn't let it happen. That was a different time. But like, I'm more kind of curious to the UFC's, the matchmakers thinking of this, because this isn't something they usually like doing. You know, they have their whiteboard and they have names in the columns. They don't like putting two names in two columns, you know? So I'm surprised that the UFC kind of lets this fly in a sense.
This sounds cynical, but they're happy to have someone with name power able to save cards in two divisions. Let's put it that way. I think they were jumping for joy when she called. They said, "Oh yeah, she's willing to fight Erin Blanchfield on a week's notice."
I guess the times are different now with all the content they had to get out. You know, so yep.
She is a premium content creator as far as fighters go. Premium, right. Very
bad. Actually, I like this question. There's a little typo in the question, but oops, ooh, not that one. Sorry. This one.
Do you think Andrade can become a two-weight world champion?
What do you think?
Yes.
Yes.
Again, Katie? I would even give her a chance in a Shevchenko rematch, if only because rematches don't play out always the same way. I mean, of course I'd pick Shevchenko, but on the right day, she could. There's nothing in Andrade's like lack. There's nothing lacking in her skill sets that tells me like, oh, well, there's no way. There's no way she couldn't catch Shevchenko. There's no way she couldn't like beat Shevchenko on an off day. She totally could. That's what makes runs like Shevchenko's so impressive. Is that either she's not having an off day, or when she has an off day, which I would argue she did against Talos Santos, she still finds a way to win. So that's what makes her so impressive. But she's not invincible. I don't think Valentina Shevchenko is like invincible. And honestly, again, and it's that hint of vulnerability that to me is what makes her one of the best fighters I've ever seen. Because you're just not on top all the time. And especially if someone like Jessica Andrade is coming at you, if you have to beat them two times or three times, at some point they're going to get you. I imagine think at some point they're going to get you. So 115 for sure. 125 is a longer shot because again, we have seen her fight Valentina. And I think that was a little more convincing than, again, the 42 seconds that we saw in there with her and Zhang Weili. But I think 115 is much more attainable. It's possible. I would never rule it out. I would never rule it out with Andrade. That's how high I am on her.
Yeah.
You think so too?
Absolutely. She can be two-weight world champion. I have her ranked in top five in two divisions. She's probably... Heck, I mean, if we're being honest, she might be top five at 35 too.
Right. Oh, she would be. Oh, if Jessica Andrade decide to go up and take a couple of fights at 135, she's breaking in the top five easily.
I'm just saying, on the right day, on the right day, Andrade could be a three division champion in the UFC. On the right day, I'm not saying she will be, but you know,
I like her. Frankly, I like her chances at 145 too, Casey. I don't know if you've seen that division. Skill wise, she'd probably be pretty good at it.
Yeah. So I mean, Jessica Andrade is awesome.
Josiane Nunes or Jessica Andrade, JK? Who are you picking?
I just really want to see that fight. I would love to see Josiane Nunes fight Jessica Andrade. That's another UFC. If you got another fight night main event slot to fill later this year, I'm just saying keep that one in the back pocket.
I think she could become a champ. I think she could, but I don't think she will.
But will and could. She has the skill set on the right day to definitely beat all champions. That's what I'm, all I'm saying. And I can't name any other fighter I can confidently say that about.
I would say, maybe Valentina could be a two division champion. That's probably the front runner. But sure. I think Zhang Weili's gonna have a chance. I think Zhang Weili's gonna have her chance to be
15 and 20. Yeah. I just want to see Weili try. I'll eventually defend the belt strawweight again. Clear the division out.
A few more times.
Clear the division out. A couple more. Yeah, two. I like to two title defenses before we start getting that conversation going.
Yeah, I completely agree.
All right. Real quick, I think there was some confusion. It's just people didn't know probably.
So why did Tyler pull out of the fight against Blanchfield? So there were some visa issues with members of her team. They just couldn't get over. And at the end, the UFC tried to help. They just couldn't get it done. So Tyler elected not to fight. And I don't blame her for that. I believe one of the corners is her fiance or husband or something. Somebody very close to her that she really wanted in the corner and has been with her for most of her career. So in the end, it was, we're all there or none of us are there. And that's the decision Tyler came to. Don't blame her for whatsoever, especially for a fight that big with title hopes for her, especially coming off that close fight with Valentina.
Flying from Brazil, big weight cut.
Very risky fight going from 3 rounds to 5 rounds. There's a lot of changes for her and not being able to have her team over there. In the end, ultimately, she decided not to fight. And do not blame her for that whatsoever.
Okay, and it's just more of a comment, but I kind of like this. Tell me what you think.
Lisa, seems like no downside for Blanchfield in this fight other than the pain of Jessica's strikes. Huge leap in experience for Erin, no matter the result of the fight. I actually completely agree with this. Yeah. I think if she gets the doors completely blown off of her and doesn't do anything, that's not going to be good. But other than that, I don't think that's going to happen. I think even if Andrade gets her out of there, it'll be a competitive fight until that point. But even if that happens, I don't think it's a huge, it's a loss and it'll sting, but I don't think it downgrades her that much, especially with the short notice effect to it. It's high risk, low reward. Honestly, it's a higher risk, lower, high reward, lower risk fight. If that makes sense. You know what I'm trying to say?
I gotcha.
From a physical sense, because Jessica Andrade is Jessica Andrade, but in terms of ranking and legacy and where she's at, where that puts her in the grand scheme of things, if she loses tomorrow night, which from what I hear, a lot of people are expecting her to do, she's going to be fine. She will be fine. She will get a few more fights and she'll be right back. So I don't think, is this a house money fight, AK, to you?
Yep, I think Lisa Llewellyn phrased this perfectly, because the immediately I would say there is a downside. And there's always downside to stepping in there with Jessica Andrade.
Getting
and
that's beat up.
Getting punched so hard in the face, it may change your life. And again, I mentioned the Kovalkovic loss before. Carolina was never the same after. You could say maybe it's just she was going to start trending downwards anyway. But she literally lost that fight and I think lost her next 3 or 4. And I personally directly connected to getting one shot popped by Jessica Andrade. I think that really changes your whole perspective and everything. I think it really shakes your confidence. Erin Blanchfield is only 23 years old. She's obviously significantly younger than Carolina was when she fought Jessica Andrade. So, and her whole, as much as we talk about her skill set, her physical gifts, so much of her run has also been defined by her maturity. I think anyone who's interviewed her or seen interviews with her, she really does carry herself as someone with some perspective, someone who knows where she belongs in the pecking order right now. I'm sure she's 195,000,000% confident that she's going to run through Jessica Andrade on Saturday. But I think she will very quickly be able to, if it doesn't go her way, by Monday morning, she'll very be quickly able to pivot to, well, okay, here's realistically, if she loses, here's why I lost, here's what I can do to get better. I do think I can beat Jessica Andrade someday. Now is not my time. I think she has the mentality for that. I think she has the team to help her get through that. So there's always a downside to losing, but as far as long-term damage, I think she'll be fine. It's not quite house money. I don't know if I'd go all the way there. But I would be shocked if she lost and people would immediately swearing her off, because a loss to Jessica Andrade will just tell you how good Jessica Andrade is and not necessarily anything about negative about Erin Blanchfield.
Yeah, I don't agree with no downside, but a loss would tell Erin and her camp what's missing, you know, because with the Molly McCann fight, even though I thought that was just an incredibly great matchup for her, the experience was great because it was MSG. It was a highly promoted fight. With this, it's a little different. Since it's at the Apex, it won't be like highly promoted. It won't be a big crowd. But five rounds, main event against a main event type of fighter in Jessica Andrade. And if Blanchfield does lose this fight, she's going to find out a lot about herself. And, you know, just depending how she loses. And that... There's only one way to get that, and that's to get in the cage and fight fights like this. And the mystery of Erin Blanchfield is like, we know she's getting better, but how much better is she getting? And even though she looked great against Molly McCann, we have to hope she's even got a little bit better than that performance to beat someone like Jessica Andrade. So that's why this fight's awesome. I'm very excited about it.
All right. Everything else? Are we good?
I think we're good.
All right. Well, we will be back tomorrow, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time, People's Pre-Fight Show, to get you ready for all the action. Your questions start to finish until the first punches are thrown. Then we'll have a post-fight show when it's done. And then AK and I will be back Sunday morning for some matchmaking. On to the next one. And then next weekend, Bellator has a card. UFC has a card. And then we're on to UFC 285 and the return of John Jones. So get excited, everybody. So thank you for watching. We'll see you tomorrow for AK, for E. Casey Lydon. I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody.
Oh, and watch some BKFC tonight.
Yes. We'll be covering. Follow on MMAfighting.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.